Welcome to the 35th episode of the Game 4 podcast. In this episode, still recording from home, we will be talking about how tabletop gaming can help in your real life. And you can't see it, but I made air quotes there around real life. I'm Adam.
I'm Matt.
And we are part of Game 4. We work for Milk Can, the company that makes Game 4. And this is the Game 4 podcast where we like to talk about getting people together in tabletop gaming. These days, we're doing it predominantly kind of virtually, but we're still building community and trying to teach you, hopefully, a little bit about tabletop gaming. Maybe an aspect you're not familiar with. Maybe you're new to tabletop gaming. Maybe you're just looking for ways to expand your tabletop gaming or think about it differently. And that's what the Game 4 podcast is all about. Matt, what have you been working on lately since the last time we recorded?
I did play another D&D session. Nothing super exciting for listeners to hear about. Still had a good time, still advancing on our long-running campaign.
That's important.
Yeah. But I did get a game of Kill Team in with Game 4 Jason. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, replayed at my house. So, and we have been basically quarantined ourselves for however many weeks. But yeah, we got to taste out the beer tap I have down there in my game room. And
the important part of the game.
Yeah, Jason had been to Indiana and picked up this year's Gen Con special brew that they sell down there, which was good. Even though there's no Gen Con, there was still Gen Con brews. So we got that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, we played Ogres versus Marines. We didn't get the full game in because we got sidetracked talking a lot and just kind of hanging out and relaxing.
Orcs? But
yeah, it was fun.
Orcs versus
Orcs,
Marines?
Yes.
Orcs, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, orcs, okay. Yeah, not orcs.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
I was reading our show notes and it got me thinking of the ogres. So.
Oh, sure, yeah, yeah. And then what other kind of stuff have you been doing?
I finally got the airbrush back out after it's been a lot of months. Just still on the Patriot. Haven't used my new one yet, but was basically just priming. So getting a lot of the models that I've been assembling over the past 6 weeks finally primed up so that I can get back into painting and get some more Kill Team stuff up.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's very cool. Yeah, well, I've been, I've been still painting on Twitch every Monday and Wednesday, and through that I've finished... I'm working on this warband for Warcry, Age of Sigmar Warcry, which is like the skirmish. It's basically the Kill Team of Age of Sigmar, which is the fantasy side, whereas Kill Team is the sci-fi side. And I've got this Nurgle warband that's I've been working on, and there's five kind of normal-sized guys and then one big guy. And the five normal-sized guys are now done. I've finished them up on Twitch, and they're all finished. And now there's this guy who's normal-sized as well, but he's riding on a giant bug. And so he's kind of the sixth member of the Beatles there, no pun intended. And he's in process right now, and I'm painting him also on Twitch. So the next time I'll be painting him will be, this upcoming Friday morning. 10 a.m. Central is when I do, that's when I do my stuff there. So, I'm looking forward to that. He's been, he's a fun guy to paint and to kind of mess with. So, and then as far as side projects, I've been working on some like stuff I'm not doing on Twitch. I've been working on some kitbashed, there's a Space Marines have this big dreadnought called the Redemptor Dreadnought. And there's the normal kit, which has lots of options and is a little bit more difficult to build to some degree. And then they have an easy to build kit, which has no options. It just has like, you know, one gun and one, you know, missile launcher thing. You don't have any options to swap out weapons and stuff like that. But it's also considerably cheaper. And so since I was going to be kit bashing it, messing with it, and I was fine with those options, I found one luckily at my local shop because they're not in print anymore or production. But I found one at my local shop and bought it. And so I've been kind of kit bashing that model. I've been working on a lot of larger models, like bigger kind of robot style models that I want to kit bash and tweak to make them look like almost like post-apocalyptic. They've been walking around the battlefield for years now. You know, they've got nobody left to fight kind of a thing, but they're all kind of grunged up and whatever. Yeah, I did a Necron. It's the Canoptic Reanimator, came in the new Indominus box. He's kind of the big, tall War of the Worlds looking guy. And I've almost finished, basically last night, actually, I finished. All I got to do now is varnish, but otherwise that model's finished. And that's also, like, I added all kinds of skulls to it and some banners and painted it to be real rusty looking and all that kind of stuff. And so I've been having fun with those kinds of things. And then I'm also building some more cultists, their resin kits from a company called Anvil Industry out of the UK. And I'm building these cultists for Zona Alpha, which is a fun kind of skirmish game. It's done by Osprey Games, actually. Yeah. And then lastly, I've got this this ogre that it's called the Maggot Crown Ogre Juggernaut from Reaper Miniatures, which is, it's a mouthful, Maggot Crown Ogre Juggernaut. But he's a cool guy. He's got like a big weird skull head and he's real super stocky, but he's a big model and it's part of Reaper's. He's part of the Reaper Bones Black line. So it's not the white bones, but the more kind of dark gray, harder plastic. Not as bendy.
Did you have any problems with like priming him or anything?
No, not at all.
Okay,
I just use my airbrush.
Okay, because I'm curious because I've had mixed results on the normal Reaper bones, the white ones or whatever. So yeah. I'm wondering if the black is a little bit better too because of that material.
I've heard from some people that there are certain spray can primers that don't. Like they stay tacky for like a really long time and they don't work well with the white Reaper bones, but the black Reaper bones. Yeah. I primed him with my airbrush and then I sprayed him some silver, like kind of Zenithal highlight straight down. And it worked out pretty well. But I'd finished him up and it was a real super quick paint job that I did on him. But then I took some fancy photos up in the studio and, you know, put those up on Instagram and everything like that. Cause I've been enjoying doing that as well lately. And then lastly, there's a faction for Age of Sigmar called the Cities of Sigmar, and that's basically the humans. And they've released a roster so that you could play them in Warcry. And so like Warcry, when it launched with these six different kind of like specialized armies just for Warcry. But then they released these card decks that you could buy, these card packs, so that you could bring in regular Age of Sigmar armies like the Skaven and the Stormcast you know, whatever. Well, for whatever reason, they decided to do Cities of Sigmar not as a card pack, but as an add-on to their monthly White Dwarf magazine. So if you buy White Dwarf number 456, I think it is, it has a list in there for all the roster stats and everything. So you could play Cities of Sigmar. And I've never painted Cities of Sigmar before. They're very... I don't know. There's a lot of heraldry. They remind me a lot of like medieval knights and stuff like that. Admittedly, there's like bigger creatures and dragons and stuff that can also be part of that army. But in the smaller game, you know, it's not the case. So long story short is I ordered some models actually because the downside to the Cities of Sigmar is a lot of their models are older and you can't get them in stores. You can only order them through the GW website. So I ordered some models and they should be showing up, next week, I think. And then I'm looking forward to building them and putting them together and making another Warcry warband, but using those guys. And they're going to be, I think, fun just because I've never got to paint. They're generally very brightly colored because they got a lot of heraldry. And it's, like I said, it's a lot of like medieval kind of, you know, looking folks. So it'll be interesting. There's halberds and, you know, pikes and crossbows and all kinds of. So that'll be fun. Some of them have big feathers sticking out of their caps, that kind of stuff. You know, it's cool.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting that stuff done. So I've been keeping busy on that kind of thing. Today's topic, actually, I think, kind of came to us. We were kind of talking about just like, you know, like what are we going to come up with for this week's episode and things like that. And it sort of cropped up and we did a little bit of research. And, you know, looked around a little bit, a couple different places. And then, you know, because we knew what we wanted to talk about. We knew we wanted to talk about, like, how tabletop gaming can have a positive effect in your real life, whatever that
means. I'm sure that, you know, there's definitely stuff I've learned that's helped me. But, you know, how anecdotal is that versus, being a real thing?
And so I looked at a bunch of different articles and things like that from a bunch of different places. And some of them talked about like how it can help your regular life. And some of them talked about how it can help like your professional life, like your business life. So we're kind of, frankly, mashing those two together a little bit here. But, you know, I don't know. A lot of those things I think cross over anyway and make sense. So, but yeah, so the idea is that, you know, tabletop gaming, like what kind of things can you learn from tabletop gaming that are actually usable and useful in your either just personal life, in your professional life, you know, that kind of stuff. And obviously there are certain skills that are not useful generally in your professional life, like, you know, rolling dice. That doesn't usually happen at work. I guess maybe if you're if you work in Vegas, I guess that's a different story. But but other than that, you know, it's not quite the same thing. But there are plenty of things because tabletop games can be so very interpersonal, and social that we think that these things are important things that you're learning from tabletop gaming. And one of the big benefits is that if you are trying to potentially get some friends into it, this is another quiver or another arrow in your quiver. You can be like, well, you know, not only is it fun, but also you can learn this and this and this, and it can help you with
right. Such or if you're trying to get like a game night or a game lunch at your work, you know, this is how you can maybe persuade the upper management of why it's beneficial to do.
That's a super good idea, actually. Yeah.
You know, as fun as it is going and shooting each other with paintballs and lasers and stuff like that, sometimes a board game can be just as good of a team building exercise and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's a very good point. Yeah. Like, because you're starting to see more, you know, team building exercises, but yet if you can have the team building exercise and not have to go to the paintball place or not have to go to the woods for whatever, you know, trust falls or whatever, just like, hey, we're going to do this, you know, and it's fun and we're doing it. Yeah. It's a good thought process. I mean, we've played games in the office in the past. We used to do D&D, you know, back before the COVIDs, and we've done some other games as well. We played, what was that one with the Bears versus Babies? I remember we played that.
Yeah,
one.
Bears versus Babies from the Oatmeal Guy.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, there's a bunch of different kind of games I think that are kind of interesting in that way.
The people are totally thinking of the guy that also has diabetes or whatever that died. When I say the Oatmeal Guy, I mean the Oatmeal comic.
Yeah, the web comic called The Oatmeal. The Oatmeal Guy you're thinking of is Wilford Brimley, and he did sadly pass away. Yes. But yeah, so like basically the different real life skills that you can learn in board games are not just for those of us who are adults who are probably listening to this podcast, but also for kids too.
Absolutely. Growing up, we definitely had some games that were at school and stuff, and they are probably not more hobby games. They're more traditional games. But yeah, I think as the games evolve, I think understanding what they can teach our children has really evolved as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, for just to start off to some degree, you know, you've got increasing basic math skills, you know what I mean? And it's not just for kids. Certainly some adults like myself can always use some practice with math, you know, but it is definitely great for kids to be able to kind of figure out math a little bit better on the fly. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, definitely. Like I know that, you know, being able to add up two dice really quickly, knowing doubles, you know, for multiplication, like my twos tables, you know, from rolling two dice, playing Monopoly growing up, that, you know, definitely helped out. And, you know, I think the math is probably one of the first things that people think of for learning for board games, especially like money. You know, you think of a lot of the games that handle money. It's good for, you know, teaching how to add up, how to make change, all that kind of stuff.
Monopoly and life and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yep.
No, absolutely. And we're not going to just talk about board games specifically. We'll also be talking about RPGs and you know, war games and CCGs even potentially. But yeah, there's a lot of this stuff that, you know, the games that you played, the board games that you may have played as a kid are also still good for kids today. But there are also other ones out there too. And a lot of them still have the same goals, just to at least, you know, to some degree, like, hey, we're going to teach you some math a little bit quicker, you know, and that kind of stuff. But that's also a good point. It's also an exposure to, you know, handling money, making change, that kind of stuff, which is also super useful for kids. And also, again, sometimes for adults like me, you know. But there's also, I think, because of the social aspect to tabletop gaming, you've also got a lot of cooperation and teamwork, and even negotiation. You know, mm-hmm. it depends on the game. There are some games that are very co-op. You know, that's what we call them within, you know, the gaming hobby. You got co-op games, and then you have most of the other games, which are generally adversarial. I'm trying to win, and you're trying to not. Right. I'm trying sometimes to make it so you don't win.
Right. Sometimes it's 2v2, though, or where you're doing sure. teams. And, you know, especially like, you know, wargaming, there's a lot mm-hmm. of team ones that you can do now. Or, you know, a lot of, like, area control games. Even if it's not necessarily a straight co-op or a straight team game, you might be negotiating with a player to help you defeat another rival. So you're kind of doing temporary alliances and mm-hmm. negotiating and trying to figure out, you know, are they up on the up and up, or, you know,
well, and
are they going to do stuff?
And with role-playing games, I mean, it's all about very frequently it's about teamwork, because usually mm-hmm. most role-playing games, it's the party. And then the GM is kind of, for lack of a better term, the enemy, right? You know, I mean, that's kind
right,
of the way
the adversary,
works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about D&D is that it shows you that, you know, one person can't really take on everything. Like, mm-hmm. everybody kind of has something they're good at, and understanding what people are good at and, you know, for strengths and weaknesses really helps you, you know, defeat your adversaries or your puzzles or traps or whatever you're working on. And that's, you know, works well in the business environment as well. You know, mm-hmm. not everybody brings the same stuff to the table, and understanding that everybody brings something different and that you can work to maximize that is a great skill to understand, not only working in a team environment, but also leading that environment.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just looking at it from other people's point of view, you know, if you're playing a more adversarial game and you're getting a conversation or some sort of negotiation coming from this player, then you're looking at it from the aspect of like, well, why do they want this? How's it going to help them or hurt me? You know, because we know we're playing a game, and it's all fun and games, but also just being able to identify this is why they want this versus why I might want this other thing, and seeing the difference there. That's a difference, you know, that's super helpful. And it's a kind of an analytical thing to figure out. But when mm-hmm. you are, you know, supposed to be cooperating or being on a team, then you're looking at it again the same way, but from a different angle. You know what I mean?
Right. And I think
you're
this
looking
is it, right.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
It's a little abstracted too, right? It's, you know, there's the, oh, we're going to work as a team to, you know, lay these boards down to cross this imaginary river, you
right.
know, team skill building activity, versus, you know, we're going and you know, diving into a dungeon and defeating a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
There's that abstraction that, you know, people are having fun and learning, whereas I've never had fun trying to cross a river.
Right.
At
yeah,
least
no.
a virtual river.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. Yeah, no, I get, yeah, that kind of stuff. I don't know. I think there's, well, I don't know. Personally, I feel like there's more benefit to something that's more team building along those aspects, you know, tabletop or and the emotional aspects, as opposed to just like the stuff you see where you go on a retreat and you have to, like you said, even if you forge a real river or whatever and you have to, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't know if I learn as much or personally, you know, but
right.
Yeah,
well, and I feel
yeah.
like you're more guarded there too, because it seems like that's the whole point of it versus, you know, kind of under the guise of learning, of guise of playing a game,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of the guards kind of get taken down, especially with RPGs where you're playing a different character. So you can kind of, maybe this is how you really think, but this way you're not, people don't know, oh, he's really trying to do this, and it's that character that's trying to do this. So
yeah.
everyone can feel a little bit maybe more open about, you know, that abstraction of who they are.
Yeah, because it's, again, you're right. You're not playing yourself. You're not being yourself. You're being potentially somebody else. So you, again, not only can see things from somebody else's point of view differently, but you can all even see things from your own point of view differently a little bit, you know? Yeah, no, that's interesting. I think another big thing that people also to some degree learn, and this is, again, both adults and children, that learn from tabletop gaming is patience. And I personally, as a person who plays a lot of tabletop games, but also likes to sometimes play video games. And I used to play a lot more than I do now. But I don't personally feel that most video games, and there are some out there that are different, but most video games don't teach a lot of patience. You know
what
I mean?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was just telling you earlier, I started playing Among Us.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's becoming a popular online game.
Right. So if you're, and the thing is, if you're the host of the game, you're usually kind of waiting until the room gets full to start the game. Mm-hmm. And I can hit that start button as soon as we hit that max, you know, as fast as possible. And I'll still have like two or three people in the chat going, when are you going to start the game? Start the game. Start the game. It's like, right, okay, yeah, everybody. Yeah, yeah. It's been literally half a second since the room filled up. I'm like,
yep. Yeah. And so because of that kind of stuff, I think tabletop games teach a lot more patience because of the general format. You know, you are taking turns. So when it's not your turn, you've got to wait till it's your turn again. You know, in a lot of video games.
And usually, you're not just waiting. You're also having to pay attention to what they're doing because it will usually affect your turn as well. So,
yeah, no, that's very true. You should be generally, as opposed to just sitting there and waiting till it's your turn again. You should also be paying attention to the game, which can be kind of focus and attention. Focus and attention and patience, they're not the same thing, but I think that they're kind of hand in hand, because if you're being patient and you're waiting for the next turn, you could just sit there and wait. And I've played games with that, with people like, you know, games like Dominion, where when it comes to the next person's turn, they're like, okay, well, let's see here. What should I do? And if you've played Dominion before, when it's not your turn, you should be thinking about what you're going to do when it's your turn. You should be paying attention to what other people are playing, but you should also be looking at your own hand. And then so that when it comes to your turn, you can be like, okay, I'm going to do this, 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 done. Like a perfect Dominion hand is like seriously played in 5 to 10 seconds. If it comes to your turn and then you are like, let me think, that's going to make everybody unhappy. And it's like I said, I've sat at those tables. So
I think everybody listening right now has exactly one or two people in their head right now of who that person is in their gaming group.
Right. And so I don't know what those people were focusing on earlier, but one of the things you should learn to play effectively is to focus and to pay attention, because like I said, even when it's not your turn, you can be learning a lot about maybe what you're going to do during your turn. And certain games, you know, to be honest, Dominion doesn't have a lot of like, I have to strategize against what you're doing. There's a little bit here and there, but there are plenty of other games where I have to pay very close attention to what you're doing, because it very much affects what I might do on my turn, you know? And that's, I think, honestly, in my opinion, for at least board games specifically, it's the way it's done mostly. With RPGs, it's not as much, because things can be a little bit more simultaneous. There's no turns. I mean, there is once the combat starts to some degree, but when you're like just sitting, you know, in the tavern trying to figure out what your next move is, there's, you know what I mean? It's a little bit more
sometimes
freeform.
Like, you know, like certain characters have split up, and so certain characters are interacting and you're kind of listening. True. But then again, your character isn't supposed to know some of that stuff until they come back. So there's a kind of a back and forth on that.
And in miniatures, war games, you really need to pay attention, because it's basically, in most of those types of games, it's one-on-one, you know?
Right.
So like if you're playing a game, you're paying attention to what your opponent is doing, because that completely drives your strategy. So I've played against people who are just literally not paying attention, you know, like they're just like, they're on their phone, they're doing whatever, they're looking at Facebook, and you're like, okay, I'm going to do this and this and this and this. And then you'd be like, all right, I need you to roll to see if your armor saved you for against this. And they're like, what's going on? And you're like, come on. You know what I mean? And so, in a perfect world, hopefully you'll learn more focus, and not everybody learns all lessons. So there's that. It's important, I think, especially to the patience part, about understanding that a game doesn't run at breakneck speeds all the time. And then to actually, while you're being patient, also to have focus and attention and be understanding and strategizing and, you know, that kind of stuff while it's not your turn. I think that's an important deal. Mm-hmm. I think another thing that's also really pulls people apart in comparison to video games with tabletop games is the ability to kind of learn to better read people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think this is a, that's a great point. It's like, especially like on like social deduction games, or like, you know, I mean, classically people think of like poker, right? When they're thinking about reading people. But I mean, social deduction games, I'm talking especially ones with like a trader mechanic, or where you're trying to weed out, you know, who's working for us, who's working against us, when there's accusations being thrown around, you know, who's telling who's lying, who's not lying, you know, do they have tells of, you know, they are, you know, really quiet when they're, you know, the bad person, or they're really quiet when they're the good person, but then very, you know, boisterous the other way. And
It's a, like, I mean, it's a bit of an older game to some degree, but Battlestar Galactica, like, you are going to have generally at least one, if not sometimes two Cylons, you know, and some of, and the crazy thing is they may not even know early on, like, that they're a Cylon, you know what I mean? So,
right.
And it's just, yeah, it's, there's a lot of games like that that have that sort of traitor mechanic. And once the person does know that they are a Cylon, now they're going to act differently. And you, but they're still trying to pretend, you know, and you get that with like, you know, Werewolf, if you've ever played Werewolf, like at a convention or whatever, that's, that game is literally all about, like, there are, there's nothing but social tells, right?
Right.
Like, there's not like that Among Us game you were talking about before. You might actually see a character kill another character, and they didn't know you were there, and you can report on them and say, hey, I saw this guy kill that guy. But in a game like Werewolf, if you've ever played, people out there have ever played Werewolf, it's literally all about, like, you know, everybody in the village wakes up and somebody's dead. And now it's all about the discussion about, well, I think it's maybe this or this. And it's, it can sometimes be real squirrely. Like, I've played games like that before where someone's just like, well, I think it's this guy because... I don't know. I just think it's him. And you're like, well, that's not, you know, but it, it does, you know, that kind of thing does help you at least to some degree to understand people a little bit more. The more you do it, I mean, beyond the fact that it just also helps build your social IQ to some degree, you know what I mean? Just, you're just interacting with people and things like that. It's one of the big benefits is to learning to read people to understand maybe what their motives are, if they're, you know, at odds with what they say, as opposed, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, Sheriff of Nottingham's another good one because you're trying to sneak stuff by the sheriff or not, and the sheriff is deciding when to call it. And, you know, there's also the whole bribery aspect of it where you could be like, you know, like, the person is probably going to know that I'm lying, but if I make it beneficial enough to them, they will let it go anyway. And kind of, you know, learning to not only read the person, but also read the situation. Like, does this person... right now it would benefit enough for me to be able to bribe them that they're okay letting me kind of, you know, get further in the game because they don't think I'm winning, or, you know, like, when do I make my move? When do I not make my move?
Oh yeah. No, that's, I think that, that, that stuff really helps a lot with trying to figure out, like, just, you know, it helps you to understand people, and you can use that to some degree, I guess, in school, but I think that that type of thing actually helps sometimes a little bit more with a lot of types of business, whether you end up in management and you are going to be trying to figure out, well, why is this person having this trouble? What can I do to fix them? They're saying this, but what are they actually like? I feel like their body English or their body language or whatever is like this, and I think that there's something else going on, or, you know, something along those lines. Like,
or, yeah, or any business negotiation when you're dealing with a vendor, or you're trying to land that contract with the customer, like, where is that fine line where I'm going to make the most amount of money, but they're still going to hire me versus, you know, I asked for too much or I didn't ask for enough, you know, where's that careful balance and reading and understanding and building relationships and stuff like that. But yeah, really learning what that person is after so that you can kind of put the, your best foot forward to, you know, to get that contract.
Absolutely. And then I think that also, honestly, like, thinking creatively, and it's a little harder to do in certain situations. I think it's harder to do in board games to some degree. There can be
especially
certainly
like
some
Euro games. Yes. Yeah. Then now I just completely blanked on the game. The one with the cards where you're trying to figure out what the picture is.
Gosh, I don't know. It's one of those board games with the cards and the board, and then
comes
in a box. Yeah, no, you're trying to figure out what the picture is. It's not Carcassonne.
No. This is, I'm going to look it up and see it because it's going to drive me absolutely batty while we're talking.
Well, so again, like I said, in board gaming, there's some there are in certain games there are definitely ways to think creatively, but a lot of times they're a bit more structured. In card games, like collectible card games, the creativity is in, I think, building the deck. Now, in certain games like KeyForge, which you and I both like to play, there's mm-hmm. no deck building. So there's that. But I think one of the things that people do really love about games like Pokemon and you know, the Magic the Gathering and stuff like that is the deck building aspects. You have rules you have to follow, a framework, but you can do a lot of crazy things within those frameworks to build a deck that in the way that you want to help you potentially win and things like that. And I think that's where the creativity can come in, at least in that kind of game. Did mm-hmm. you figure out what game you were talking about?
No, I'm still looking.
Okay. And then obviously in role-playing games, there's a lot of creativity.
Oh, yeah, definitely role-playing.
I mean, because there's so many memes out there about, like, you know, the DM is like, all right, well, this is what's going to happen. And then the players are just like, well, what if we do this instead? And then, you know, and sometimes it can be just silly. And other times it's like, oh, actually, that's a really good idea that I didn't even think of. And so not only trying to come up with those things, but to also in some situations be a part of coming up with those ideas, or even just being a party in it, just being there and seeing the way that this person's thought process works. Like, they've been giving this task or this problem by the DM, and then now they have to sit down and go, okay, well, what if we solved it this way? And to mm-hmm. you, that might have been you, the other player in the group, in the party, might have been like, wow, I never would have thought of that. And that kind of thing, seeing the way that other people solve problems and their creativity and right. how it works, kind of like as it happens in real time, I think there's a huge benefit to that, because I know in talking with programmers, as a person who's not really a programmer at all, but I've had a tiny little bit about background in it, I'd be like, well, what about this? And then a programmer will go, well, actually, you would probably generally do it this way. And to me, that's like, I would have never thought of that. But to a person who's been doing it for a while in business, that's kind of standard. That's the normal, you know, way mm-hmm. this thing is getting done. And so being able to then look at this from a different angle, I think, helps in the thinking creatively.
I did find the game. Yes. Dixit was the one I was couldn't think of.
Oh, so see, Dixit, I've never played that.
Yeah. Okay, so Dixit is, for people not familiar with it, it's a game where basically it's a set of artwork, and you're basically trying to give, it's kind of like Code Names is very similar along the lines of the same. You're basically mm-hmm. trying to give out a way for the storyteller to use like a word or something to kind of give a clue of which card that they picked from, mm-hmm. which card is theirs. And they only want so many people to pick. They don't want everyone to guess it because then it's too easy and then they lose points, but they want just enough people to guess it. So they're trying to figure out a way to describe the card in a more abstract way that they don't think everybody will get it, but at least some people will get it.
Gotcha.
So, and that's kind of the same with Code Names. You're trying to give your partner the clues of which cards you're thinking of without the other team knowing which cards you're thinking of.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah,
there's some creativity going with that teamwork and trying to kind of understand how the other person is thinking creatively.
Mm-hmm. So, and I think in miniatures and things like that, you know, in wargaming, the creativity. I mean, obviously, there's plenty of actual hobby creativity, like in the painting mm-hmm. and the building and all that stuff. But outside Absolutely. Of that, there's the creativity of I have this book. This army book that has all the different possible, you know, units for my army. And I also have a limit of I have to build, let's say, a 2,000 point army following the points costs for each of these. And I have a specific force organization chart, usually is what they're called, where like I can't just run five generals. I can only have one mm-hmm. general, but I can have up to four troops. And so you have to follow like this format. So within those parameters, which are the same very frequently as business parameters, like we can't do this, we can't do that. This breaks the law. Right. This is, we don't have this much money, you know, whatever the thing is. But in this situation, you're being told you have 2,000 points, which is kind of like money, and you have this and this, and you have to follow these formats. And that's what you sit down to build your army list in. Like in right. within those parameters. And that is, I mean, there are plenty of people out there that I know who literally almost never play. They just, it's called theory crafting. And they just basically or sometimes List Hammer if you're playing like, you know, Warhammer specifically, but they will just sit down and come up with lists and then go, well, that could, what if I move this guy out and put in this unit instead? And then this would synergize with that.
Right.
So thinking about those things as well, I think can give you a lot of creativity. And if you're into the competitive scene, like it's all about the lists very frequently, you know?
It's amazing how many, like, you know, it's a, there's a finite amount of resources and of models and unit types and all this. There, I mean, it is finite, but it seems almost infinite the way that people have been able to craft their lists to put together.
Different combinations. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Same with Magic the Gathering, right? The, you know, they're putting together your 60 card deck, you know, there's so many different ways you can do that. Or, you know, are you taking one mana type? Or are you taking two? Or maybe you're even going for three, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. And that kind of also then leads into resource management to some degree. There's creativity in staying within the parameters of your resources, but then there's also sometimes games where resources can be shifted, resources can be moved around, spent, gained, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, engine building games, like, I think that that, you know, makes sense for those types of things. I mean,
Worker placement and engine building, like wherever you've got a finite amount of resources, you're usually competing with those resources against other people. You can't have them all, so you've got to decide what's most beneficial towards your goal. Or, you know, whether your goal is to have most amount of points, generally for like a board game, but even then, sometimes even that's a trade off because sometimes, you know. Do I go and get the extra resources? So like, you know, if it's worker placement, do I spend some of my points, you know, that I trade off some of my points at the early part of the game to get extra workers so that I can do more resources later in the game? Or do I go for the win, you know, for the points right now towards the win, you know, that trade off back and forth, you know, what is the optimal thing in that situation?
Right. Yeah. And you get that in, I mean, you don't have resource management too much in like role-playing games. I mean, you have a certain amount of gold that you can use to spend on, I don't know, like swords and armor. And you know.
I mean, wizards and stuff like that, where you've got like your spells or something where you've got to memorize.
Sure.
You only have so many spells you can take with you. And
that's true, yeah.
Also deciding, you know, do I use my spell now or do I just use my staff, you know, and hold that spell because something nasty is coming along.
So yeah, at that point, then it gets into even that kind of timing and trying to figure out what's the best way to go that way. Yeah, I can see that. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot that you can learn, especially in the board gaming arena for resource management, because a lot of games are really basically just about resource management, you know, within the board gaming space, certainly. And I think you can also, you know, practice leadership skills to some degree, maybe not as much in, say, like a CCG, a collectible card game, and maybe not as much even in like a miniatures game, but I think definitely in, to some degree in board games, there are some options here and there, but really it's about RPGs, role-playing, that, that at that point it really becomes about leadership. And because you have a very open-ended, for lack of a better term, kind of format for to get things done. You know, in a board game, there's like this part, and then there's the next part of the turn, and the next part of the turn, and then we start another turn. And it's the same way in miniatures. It's the same way in collectible card games. It's basically a very specific turn order. In role-playing games, it can be like herding cats, can't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So in that situation, leadership, I mean, obviously it is generally the DM's kind of job to some degree to be like, look, maybe you guys should decide to do this, or maybe you should go this way or whatever. But there are plenty of DMs that are not there to do that. They will let you flounder.
Right. Yeah. I personally try not to. In fact, I'll usually, the way I'll, if I do decide like, okay, they're really arguing about this or somebody's really pushing for an idea that seems absolutely horrible, but this might be kind of funny to do. I kind of let consequences be the thing that kind of goes, oh, hey, maybe they you guys need to work together because you guys didn't work together and this happened.
Right. Yeah. Whether it's a time limit sort of a situation, you guys have got to make a decision by this point or something along those lines. But yeah, that kind of things, especially, you know, again, leadership can sound sometimes a bit loftier, you know, like, but if you're basically just like leadership in that we need to pick a side, we need to go in a direction,
right.
We need to come up with a plan, you know,
it's not being the alpha gamer of, okay, right. This is what we're going to do. And this is how we're going to do it. It's the, you know, more of the innate leader who's, you know, getting everyone to work together, listening mm-hmm. to people, making trade-offs, and working for the betterment of the team versus, you know, someone just trying to, you know, say, nope, this is, we're not listening to any of you. I clearly know best because of X, Y, and Z. So we are always going to do whatever I say.
Yeah. And it's honestly, it's a situation of, you know, very frequently it's about negotiation as opposed to saying, look, this is the thing we're going to do. It's more about trying to get the party to work together because you know that they work better. You know, the different skill sets you have work better when they're blended together as opposed to all of them off doing different stuff in different directions. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that there's a big benefit to having a leader. I mean, you know, again, like I said, sometimes the DM needs to be the leader and just remind the players that it's not about just, you know, eating chips and movie quotes and having a good time. You're trying to sit down and play a game. But when it comes down to within the actual realm of the actual, you know, team, the party, whatever, depending on the game you're playing, there does generally need to be some sort of person who's kind of trying to steer things, because otherwise, I mean, how many different games have you been in where they've just kind of gone off the rails because the party doesn't have a direction?
Not as many with RPGs, but definitely mm-hmm. co-op board games where it was like, okay, we are totally going to lose this because mm-hmm. So-and-so has just kind of gone rogue and doing things that just are dumb. And this person's spiteful of this other person. So they are intentionally trying to screw up this person's plans. And yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good point, actually, because it's not just RPGs. You're right. Co-op board games also, there can be leadership because, you know, if the way forward is unclear to multiple people within the co-op group, it can fail. You know, mm-hmm. how many games of Pandemic have both of us lost?
Because, oh, geez, yeah.
You know, I mean, like, that's a tough one to begin with, even when you're firing all cylinders. But if you've got right. a team that has disagreements about how things should be done, that's
yeah, you lose really fast there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think that it's important to look at these different types of games. You know, and like I said, in a game like, in miniature games, there's not a lot of leadership skills because, again, it's usually a one-on-one kind of game. And same with Magic the Gathering, Pokemon, Keyforge, Force of Will, any kind of, like, you know, collectible card game. There are times you might play a team, you know, a game of four,
right.
You know, players or something like that. But that's, again, you're still all playing adversarially. If you are supposed to be all on the same team, whether it's a co-op board game or whether it's a party in an RPG, having a leader is, I think, a good idea. And sometimes, depending on the group, you may have never played leader before. You may not just not be interested in leading, and you may end up in a group that at that point, you do end up having to become the leader just because, like,
right.
everybody else is in the same mindset you are and somebody's got to do it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good thing to learn. I think it's a smart thing to kind of pay attention to.
Right. To learn when you should lead and when times maybe you shouldn't and you should listen to somebody.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I think that, that's the thing too. You don't want obviously a group of all leaders because that's not going to work out. So, right. I will, like, in games like that, I will step up if needs be, but frequently I kind of, at least in gaming, I prefer to kind of sit back a little bit sometimes, but if it seems like it's trouble, I will definitely try to hop in there and see if I can fix the problem. And that's maybe one's leadership style versus other types of leadership styles. So, yeah. I think there's a lot to learn, obviously, from tabletop gaming. We all know that. But I think there's a lot to learn, and there's definite benefits that you can use in your normal daily life, in your interactions with friends and family. There's also things you can also obviously learn in the realm of business. And I'm not even talking about like I'm in an office type business. You could work pretty much anywhere where you're at least interacting with other people. You know what I mean? Like if you are a park ranger and you sit in the top of a, you know, tower, you know, most of the time by yourself and look at the bears, well, that's maybe not as useful. But although patience, I guess, is probably
important. Right. But if you're selling stuff on Etsy or you know, or working with the public or, you know, there's a lot of different places where negotiation, leadership, all the stuff that we've talked about today
Whether you are interacting with other employees or other, you know, colleagues, or whether you're interacting directly with customers and the public, it's important, I think, to learn about these things. And I think that you can learn more about your, like, if you're self-aware, you can learn more about yourself sometimes also from a low stakes situation like a tabletop game versus a potentially higher stakes situation like your job, you know, and that kind of thing. If you goof up your interpersonal skills or your leadership skills in Dungeons and Dragons, then maybe the kobolds will win. But if you goof up your leadership skills in your business, then, you know, then you don't have a business anymore or something, or you get fired or who knows. And there's a lot of things. So, yeah, I think it's useful for people to kind of see that stuff. So, but yeah, you got anything else?
No, I was just thinking, I think that's about what I had. So, you know, I think it would actually, we got deeper than I thought we were going to get. So,
yeah, well, awesome. That's good. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Game 4 podcast. If you've got questions or comments and you're watching on YouTube, please leave a comment below. If you are listening via your favorite podcast player or just aren't into the whole YouTube comment section thing, then you can feel free to reach out to us via email at podcast@imgame4.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can check out our website at imgame4.com. That is www.imgame4.com. Thanks.